So hello and welcome to this spontaneous extra mentoring call, which wasn't in the original plan, but the idea of it came to me yesterday actually when I was reading all of the hot seat applications, and I knew that obviously we couldn't pick everybody. And then when I was doing the hot seats, there was questions coming in while I was doing the hot seats, and of course I wasn't able to stop and answer them because I was focused on the hotties. And I thought, you know what? I'm not particularly got anything planned for Wednesday evening. I normally go for a swim in a sauna, but not a big deal to miss it. And I thought, actually, wouldn't it be quite nice and sort of spacious feeling to just slot an extra session in? And then I know that I've got time for everybody this week, and I've got time for everybody's questions. And maybe some people can't make tomorrow evening, and it also means that there's less pressure on the call tomorrow. So I thought, even if we just have an hour, I mean, let's see how we go. I'm not going to be super strict, but in my mind, I'm sort of thinking, an hour hanging out, seeing how I can help could be a really nice thing to do. And then I've still finished early enough to go and curl up and watch a bit of something lovely on Netflix. I'm watching this thing at the moment. I think it's called Nobody Wants This. Any of you watching that? Yeah, Rena's watching that. Yeah, it's just really it's just sort of really sweet and compelling somehow. It's not like the best thing I've ever seen, but it's really nice actually after a long day's work. Can I go and curl up in bed? I know you're not supposed to watch your TV in bed, but just this week I'm treating myself. Go and curl up in bed and watch a couple of episodes of that before I go to sleep. So that's what I've got to look forward to after you lot. So you can be as tough with me as you want because I've got something nice planned afterwards. Right. So what we're going to do is we are going to, I think because this is an unscheduled extra one, it feels a little less official somehow. Oh, thank you, Jill. That's really kind of you. And actually, it's very much what I wanted to do. I didn't feel under pressure or some sense that I should. I just thought, oh, this would be a really nice thing to do. But I slept on it. I thought if I wake up and I'm really tired, I'm not going to push myself. But no, I was all good. So what we'll do, we're going to run this like I ran the session on Monday evening. Not all of you would have been there on Monday evening, but the way these run inside the membership, I'll talk you through it. So the first thing is, if you have a question for me, I'd like you to type a capital Q and then your question in the chat box. But the question needs to be a statement, like a question, a statement, a sentence, not an essay. Because I can't read an essay and process the essay and still sort of be present for all of you. So it needs to be like a pretty high level, one or maybe two sentences. And then what I do is I come and unmute you now because of the nature of this week. And actually, even in the membership, if somebody doesn't want to come on camera and speak, they don't have to, it's not compulsory. But people normally do. And I ask you to unmute yourself and introduce what you do in your business. And I do that for two reasons inside the membership. One is, because it allows people to get to know you. And the more of your fellow members know you and what you do, the better they can support you when they see you in the Facebook group. And the more we have this sense of a cohesive sense of community where people know each other rather than just you all know me and I know you, but you don't know the people who are alongside you. The other reason is that it's PR for your business, basically. You never know who's listening. And every time you come on to a call and you say what you do, you just don't know who's listening. Is it a potential client? Is it a potential referral partner? Is it someone who's going to invite you on their podcast? You just don't know where that's going to go. And it's like with business, the more people know what you do, the better that is for your business. And I'll explain actually the reason why I like the capital Q. There's two reasons for the capital Q. One is that on some of our calls, the calls can get quite busy, but busy in a really good way. If there's a lot of people on the call, and people are very chatty because the longer people are in the membership together, the more they sort of side chat in the chat box while I'm talking, or the more they contribute to each other by commenting. And it's wonderful, and I encourage that. And the whole point of the membership is it's a community. But if it's very busy, it's really hard work for me to, I have to read everything to figure out what's a comment. You know, what's somebody just commenting? What's somebody sharing a story? And what's actually a question for me? And it also helps us with our timestamp. So I have an assistant called Jen, and she puts the timestamps up. So with the membership, particularly, if you can't make a live call, but you want to see what was covered, you can just log in, go and get the list of questions, see which questions look like they're directly relevant to you. check the timestamp and just go and dip in and listen to the bit that you want. And I think that's probably all I need to say to get started. If you did apply for a hot seat, I've got your hot seat form, and I've got that available to open up and just glance over it and remind myself what you talked about before we speak. And I'm going to take a sip of water because, as you know by now, I'm not doing very well at making sure I drink enough water. So I need to drink it now so that my voice doesn't start playing up. And then if you've got questions about anything, now the sorts of things you can ask questions about, literally whatever you want to ask. Something you're feeling stuck about, a decision you've got to make, something I've talked about in one of the trainings this week, but you want a bit more clarity, or you want me to go a bit more in depth into something. You might want to ask me something about my own business. You might want to ask me something personal about my own life. There are certain things I'm not such an expert in, but if you ask me something that I'm definitely not an expert in, I'll tell you I'm not an expert in that and I'm not the best person to help you. But pretty much there's no question that is off limits. If it's helpful for you, it's likely going to be helpful for somebody else. So I'm just have a sip and then we'll come and brilliant. I love the fact that there's some questions flowing in. So there's work to do. And actually, I'd gone for a nap. I did get a bit tired this afternoon. I'd gone for a little nap before this. And then I thought, all right, I'll have a cup of tea to wake me up again. And I thought, you know, actually the call will wake me up. When I get there and I get asked questions, that will perk me up. So just take a second, then we'll get started. Okay, fantastic. So, oh, brilliant. Loads of questions. Love it. So Evgenia is coming first. So Evgenia, would you like to unmute yourself? And I know the other evening you tried this and you didn't have very good internet connection and we had to abort, but let's try again. Hi, come and introduce, just let everyone know what it is you do, and then we can jump into your question.
Hello. The connection should be fine now because I'm actually at home this time. Okay, so how can I summarize this? I used to have a coaching business a few years ago, and I became quite burnt out because it was sort of low value, low ticket coaching sessions that where I gave a lot of value, but I wasn't getting much in return. So eventually I just went back into full-time employment because I needed that stability. Anyway, now that my daughter is older, I feel I'm in a better position to return to the idea of going back to my own thing and gradually, hopefully do it gradually by dropping the hours in my main full-time employment. And therefore, I've signed up for the membership to keep me accountable. And my main question from earlier today is
I can see
regarding.
the question actually. You said how to piggyback other people's audiences, especially when you're just starting out yourself. We can talk about this. I'm curious, first of all, when you use that word piggyback, how does that feel to you? Does that feel like a comfortable word?
It was the first word that came up,
Okay.
because I didn't even think about this as an option, because you went through a lot of options for marketing, and you mentioned that actually one can build a business just by through collaborations, I guess. You didn't use the word collaborations, but I guess this is more about partnerships and
Yeah,
collaborations.
no, and I think I did actually partnerships. So there's lots of different words for it. So in the online world, you hear the word joint venture a lot, but also that can be quite scary for some people. And joint ventures in the online space can be quite complex as well. And then collaboration, partnership, strategic alliance. It's really about two businesses joining forces. So it's not so much about, you know, one of the reasons why some businesses get stuck at stage three for a long time. There's two main reasons it happens. One can be because they just haven't put the foundations in place in stage one and two for that business to work really well. They may not have got their messaging strong enough. They may not have put effective online assets in place. But sometimes they have got all of that in place and the business is still not really working in the way they want it to. And it's usually because they don't have enough reach. They're not reaching enough people for enough clients to find them for that to make the financial difference. And what they are often doing, and I don't know if social media is to blame, because there is this, I started my business 13 years ago and there wasn't this obsession with social media back then. And now everybody thinks that the only way to grow a business is on social media. And there's something about both social media and content marketing, and they're both completely valid. And content marketing has been a core strategy for me. So for me, partnerships has been like my 70%, and content marketing has been my 30%. It can feel really slow. It can feel like, oh, you do some activity and then one person likes you and then likes your post. And then, a few days later, somebody else follows you and painfully slowly over time, and it builds, and after a while it builds faster and it snowballs. But those early days, if you're trying to build a following from scratch, just on social media or just on your YouTube channel or just through your search engine optimization, a lot of people just get really demoralized and give up because it's just not happening quickly enough and they're not working with clients. And so the other people's audiences and partnership stuff is, and I think I know why you've used the word piggyback. It's because I use the word other people's audiences. And the reason I use the word other people's audiences, or the words, is it's almost the mo it's the best way to encapsulate all of the strategies that basically are other people's audiences. So if you write a guest blog post for somebody, you're reaching somebody else's audience with because they're sharing the blog post. If you're interviewed on a podcast, then you're getting exposed to somebody else's audience. It's the person who hosts the podcast. If you're invited to do a training or a masterclass inside somebody's membership or mastermind group, you're getting exposed to their audience. If you're invited to give a talk, it's somebody else's audience. Even networking, really, tech, really, truly. According to that definition, networking is also somebody else's audience. It's where you yourself personally haven't gone and had to gather all these people one by one by one by one because they're already a ready audience. And I think because I use the phrase other people's audience, I can sort of see where that would be a natural next phrase. So yes, collaborations, partners, strategic partnerships. And you posted in the group the question, how can I get this to work for me when I'm just starting out? I think you said, why would somebody want to partner with me when I'm just a beginning business? Yeah. And it's bit, so you're right in one form of that thinking, because you're thinking, what's in it for them? What's in it for them? And that's a valid question because something has to be in it for them always. Somebody's not going to promote you or give you an opportunity if there isn't something in it for them. But it doesn't have to be so it doesn't have to be something like, well, I've got 10,000 people on my mailing list. Have you got 10,000 on your mailing list? If you have, then let's do this deal. It can be a bit like that with joint ventures in the online space at a quite high level. It can very much be about that because people want to partner with other people where it's like, I'll scratch your back, you scratch my back. But there's a lot of opportunities that are not about that at all. So if I'm a podcast host, I don't care how big your business is. If I'm a podcast host, I'm looking for really good talks for my audience. I'm looking for something real. A podcast host is interested in serving their audience and providing good talks to their audience. That's all they care about. They don't care about you and your business and how big your business is. And so sometimes it's the value you bring. I know when I was getting started, and I was teaching my message of selling from the heart. And I didn't have any audience. I wasn't really, I hadn't really got set up, but people would hear what I do and they'd say, wow, I really love the sound of that. I think my people would really like that. Would you like to come and give a talk? And that was how I got started. I also did quite a lot of partnership stuff with other very early stage businesses. And some people turn their nose up at this. They might go, well, I've only got 100 people on my mailing list, and she's only got 100 people on hers. what's the point? You know, I'm looking for the big fish. But actually, if you do something with, if you've got 100 or 50 and somebody else has got 100 or 50, you're still doubling your reach. You're still reaching a whole new pool of people. And I remember once somebody saying to me in a session very much like this, somebody said to me, oh, it's all right for you, Catherine, because you do partnerships with, you know, all these people. You do partnerships with Anne Wilson and Suzanne Dibble and Veronica Pullen. And they listed all these people that I do these partnerships with. And I said, yeah, but when we started doing stuff together, they didn't have those enormous businesses. We were all starting together. You know, I don't know if you know Suzanne Dibble, but she's the Small Business Legal Academy, and she's got a massive business now. It absolutely, what's the phrase? Does hers dwarf mine, or does mine dwarf hers? Doesn't somebody'll have to correct me on that phrase? But anyway, hers is much bigger than mine. But when I first met her, I was the one with the more established business, and she was just creating her first ever online course. And I met her at an event, and we got chatting, and I really liked the sound of what she did. And I said, "Oh, you know, I think my people would love your small business legal course for business women. When it's ready, I'm happy to share it." And so, you know, if I'd gone, "Oh, I only want to do partnerships with big businesses," I never would have had a partnership with Suzanne, which has served me really well over the years. So it is about you, but you do, I think, just to circle back, you do need to have, now, so this is going to sound like me sounding like a broken record, but you do need to have something that's valuable to that other party. And that something valuable is usually the talk or the topic that you're going to speak on. And this comes right back to why it's so much easier to make your business work when you are some sort of specialist. So either you're a specialist in something, so you stand out, or you might be slightly more of a generalist, but you have a talk that is quite unique. And nothing's ever completely unique, but you just might have a different twist on something. So I have a talk title called Why Closing the Sale is Bad for Your Business. Or it used to be Why Closing the Sale is Bad for Your Heart-Centered Business. It's a brilliant topic. No, you know, it's not that I'm original talking about sales, but to be the one saying closing the sale is bad for business when all the other sales people are teaching you to close the sale, it's just something that gets you to stand out a little bit. So, yeah, I've said a lot of different things there in a lot of different directions, but does that help a little?
Yes, and in fact, you mentioned podcasts. It's interesting. So a few years ago, when I was doing coaching, it was mainly in the space of career change for doctors. And interestingly, people still know me for that, even though I haven't been doing this for some time, but people keep mentioning, oh, you're still doing this, you're well known for this. And recently I was invited, somebody reached out to me and said, would you mind doing a podcast for us for that space, for that topic? But since then, I've actually decided I'm not that interested in that space and topic anymore. So that's why I'm saying, I am starting from scratch.
Yeah,
But
but
it's
you,
interesting,
what you're seeing is you're experiencing that there is a power in being known for something specific, because even after these years, people still think of you for that, even though you don't want to do it anymore. And you have joined the membership, so I can refer you into there is now sometimes I don't always remember exactly where a training is. And if you ever can't find anything, you can tag Angie in the Facebook group, or you can send her an email. But I did an expert Q&A on partnerships. So there's a training in the members area on joint ventures, which is still useful. And then there was like an open Q&A that I did in on the topic of partnerships and collaborations. So what I just spent sort of 10 minutes talking about, you've got like 90 minutes worth of a deeper dive to get you thinking and thinking about how you can get it working for you. So yeah,
Thank you.
thank you for bringing your question. Wonderful. And actually, since I just mentioned the membership, I'm just going to type the URL in there, businessfromtheheart.com. I'm not going to talk a lot about the membership this evening, other than in passing, unless I decide I'm going to, other than to say that it is open for enrollment at the moment until it's open for enrollment until next week, actually, but until the end of Sunday, there's an extra bonus for those of you that are in ex Business from the Heart Experience Week, which is place on a sticky message interactive workshop, which is about going to take place about 3 weeks after you join. So you've got time to do the vision and planning process and then work on your message and then bring that message and captivating introduction to that workshop, and we can refine it and fine-tune it. And you can, if you want feedback on your message, we can do a bit of that this week as well. So, oh yes, and Jane, who is Fernanda on here, but Jane, you've also joined. So were you in it before, Jane? No, you did my course, didn't you? That's right, you've not joined the membership yet. Okay, so we're coming next to Rena. I just got to jot down a little timestamp to make Jen's job earlier on. And yeah, Rena, do you want to introduce yourself and just very briefly tell us what your business is all about, and then we can jump into your question.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you also for putting this last minute Q&A in. My name is Rena. I coach women in their 30s, ambitious women who may be at mid to senior points in their career. And on the outside, they look like they have everything pretty perfect, but inside, often struggling with self-doubt, perfectionism tendencies, and a real desire to live differently. But are often masked and pressured by kind of the should-be's of what kind of mother, daughter, business owner, friend they ought to be. And I'm trying to figure out exactly how it is, but what I'm finding a pattern is the people I most enjoy helping are those where we're working on creating actionable steps in their lives to create the lives that they want to have, that feel as good as they look on the outside. And my question is what tips you might have, Catherine, when you feel that you can coach in many areas and are struggling to define clearly, where to focus?
I have to say, Rena, I saw you. Obviously, I read your question before I asked you to introduce yourself. Your introduction, you sound absolutely, completely crystal clear who your ideal client is.
But my ideal client is me of the past, and I don't really know if that exists in the same way as I say it.
Have you worked with clients who fit that profile?
A couple, but
Okay.
not at the full ticket price, sort of more in my training, but definitely elements of it. And I guess just a brief context, very brief context for why I asked the question. Is one of the struggles I am facing is whether to market myself as a coach to Brit sort of ethnic minority women in the UK. And my reason being is I think as a British Asian woman, I have felt a number of additional kind of should be statements of what I think I should be. But as I'm starting to coach, bear in mind I'm based in Copenhagen, I'm actually coaching more women who are not in that demographic and equally feel many of those same challenges. So I wonder if perhaps I've labeled it as that's a minority challenge, but actually it's maybe a universal challenge.
Okay. And actually, Anita is here on the call, Anita Amendra, and she I haven't spoken to her recently, but she has explored similar ideas around working with Asian women because of, what you've just said reflects some of what I've heard her say before. So you two have got some synergy there as well. And with you talking and then seeing her name, I just thought I'd point that out. Where is that? I want to ask, where is that question really coming from? And I'm going to ask instead, what is it that there's Anita waving over there? Hello, Anita. Hi. Which is what do you want to do? Like you yourself, what do you feel drawn to do and passionate? If you could take out all the head reasoning from it, like, what should I do?
It's more about helping as many women in that situation. It doesn't matter where they're from. And that's why I think I feel this friction, because to some extent, I feel like it's easier to market to the British Asian demographic because in some ways it's an underserved market. And in other ways, I think actually this is more what I'm the bit I'm more drawn to is the maybe ambitious women, younger than they typically would be for the roles, who are struggling with imposter syndrome, whilst on the outside always seem to have it put together.
And so the Asian women is coming almost from a, I think I should. I should because I am one and I understand what they're going through. And I should because it would be a tighter niche and therefore I'd stand out more. But actually your heart, your feeling is actually you want to help any woman who's in that category who's struggling with those things. Is that right?
Kind of. Part of me thinks as a business, I want to help anyone who's struggling. And I also think I do a lot of advisory work and I do a lot of volunteer work. And so I kind of think maybe there's maybe my Robin Hood approach of kind of like charge money to anyone who could benefit. And perhaps I do pro bono work for minority groups where appropriate. I don't know. I guess the fear that's in all of this as well is I've been that woman. I've come from fairly senior positions, and if in the next couple of years I want to completely shift how I work, and then this will be a primary income stream, then I need to monetize it pretty quickly.
Okay. And you have an idea that selling, speaking to Asian women or not speaking to Asian women will make a difference to the financial aspect?
No, I think it's more it's a little bit more. I live in Copenhagen now, so it's a bit more tricky to meet Asian women. So it's not that I think serving Asian women or so not serving Asian women is going to make a difference to the finances. I think it's more I want to quickly make a decision and get moving. And I feel that I keep getting a bit stuck on this. And I attended the mentoring session yesterday, and I know one of the hot seats. There was a lady talking about whether she defines her niche by the minority as well and not. And I felt that similar struggle. And I liked that you said you don't have to tell your ideal client who they are
No.
and what they look like.
No, you just have to speak to her. And Asian women, so if you speak to your ideal client, and that ideal client is an ambitious 30-something woman who on the outside has achieved all of those things, but inside it doesn't feel on the inside like it looks on the outside. She wants a different sort of life, but she's caught up in all of these obligations and expectations and she can't escape out of it. You talk to her like that. She could be from
Right.
any background, but because you are an Asian women will be more inclined to gravitate to you because you are an Asian woman. So I don't feel you need to niche and specialize so tightly that you lay your stall out for Asian women. They will naturally recognize themselves and be drawn to you because you are, and they'll know that you understand them. But it will also mean that you can also help any woman who feels that way, who responds to that message. I don't know that either of those would necessarily get your business going quicker, but I guess if you did set your stall out very clearly, as I'm here to serve Asian women, some of the non-Asian women might hear your message and think, oh, I'm really interested in what she does. And that sounds like me, but she's for Asian women and I'm a white woman or a black woman. So it's,
Right.
yeah.
And I think as you say that back, what I'm really picking up on, and it's I don't want to tighten it that much, but I fear that my current pitch or current opening is maybe too broad. And actually, I'd love your thoughts. Is it a bit too wishy-washy? Does it need to be tighter?
No, I thought it sounded absolutely. It wasn't what I expected to come out of your mouth when I'd read your question, to be honest. It was long. So in terms of, I think the specificity of the woman and the problem and the pain and I think the what she wants more than anything was a bit lost. It was quite hard to pick that out. The closest I think I heard was she wants to live life differently.
Yeah.
But partly the reason it got lost was because after you said that, you carried on talking for quite a while. So it was just long. You can say the same thing, I think, just with a lot less words, just so tightening up the way you describe it. But if you were to tighten it up more, how would you tighten it up? What would you tighten it up to? I'd just be interested to compare.
I would perhaps consider whether I specify if it's corporate people, if they're working in corporates, creatives, entrepreneurs. At the moment, the clients have kind of come from all over those, so I don't really know where to narrow.
Okay, because my brain immediately went to corporate professional women, but you hadn't specifically stated it. So you could say, yeah, you could. I mean, if you really wanted to tighten up, you could say women who work in law or women who work in financial services. You said that you could tighten up into the actual type of role as well. But I don't know that you need to. But you could make it clearer that you could make it clearer that it's for women who are working in the corporate world.
And I guess the other thing about tightening up is maybe talking about what I offer. And this is where I said I'm struggling to get it tight. A lot of my corporate background has also been around transformation. A lot of it's been around well-being in corporates and in fashion. So I have a natural interest in well-being, but actually some of the coaching I've most enjoyed doing is actually about self-esteem, and it's not directly to well-being. I don't know if I should even say any of that up front, but in my messaging, part of me also just thinks it's quite fun to coach on the variety, and I quite enjoy seeing what people bring to the sessions and what they need support with. But my fear is, when I look at your messaging and when I hear these good pictures, they're super crystal clear. I can imagine in my head, what does that person do and who do they help? And when I think about myself, I sometimes wonder, is that too small a niche? Women who have it, who, it looks like they have it all together, but actually are struggling on the inside. I think a lot of people can relate to that, but I don't know if that's just the circles I'm in. I don't know. Maybe I'm waffling.
Do you think there are enough women who feel like that?
Yes, but where do I find
Well, that's a different question.
them?
That's a completely different question. So, yeah, you're saying a lot of different things there. Let me just see how we can wrap this up. So, I'm just going to wrap it up by saying when I talk about messaging and I teach about messaging, you have what I call your broader message. And the way to imagine this would be, I always imagine it as being like if you think about having a website and the broader message is after somebody's decided that your website is somewhere they're interested in being, they'll start reading the longer message. And a lot of what you said there when you introduced yourself at the beginning is part of that longer message. There was lots and lots and lots of description. It's brilliant, it's perfect, but that's your longer message. And then you pull it up to a captivating introduction. This is my name for it. And the captivating introduction, or on a website, this would be a positioning statement. And to see what I mean, you can go and look at my website. It's where when someone comes across you for the very first time, in literally one or two sentences, very succinctly, they can get that understanding of, ah, this is who you help. This is who you help. This is the problem they've got, and this is the solution you help them get. And that's quite tight and succinct. Now, the how you help doesn't really necessarily come into that. And I feel that as soon as you then start talking about, well, I coach, there's something about this really powerful statement about women who they want to live life differently, and you're going to help them create a life that feels as good on the inside as it looks on the outside. That's really powerful. And then you start talking about well-being. Now, the well-being doesn't quite match. It sounds a little woolly in comparison to that quite powerful message. So I wouldn't necessarily bring in a huge amount of your process to your message. Your process can come after you're in the sales conversation. And that's where you can be saying, almost diagnosing for her, these are the things that I'd really love to work on with you. And one of the things, and I don't always work on this with all of my clients, but one of the things I want us to work on alongside helping you achieve this way of living differently is to work on, how you're taking care of yourself. And so, but I feel like you don't want to cram all your different, or these are all the different ways I can help you, because it's overwhelming for people. You just want to dangle the carrot and have them feel so drawn by that message that they come closer because they want to find out more. And if you blur too much, so having that message on the website, or not just on a website, anywhere, is really helpful. But if you blur too much, people read it all, and then there's no reason to come closer to you. So it's like this finding this little fine balance. So I need to move on to the next person, if that's okay. But hopefully that was helpful just for just dropping in for today. And I think on these calls, I'm not going to be able to solve everything for everybody, but what I like to say, so in the membership, what I like to say is that we can chip away. If you come on a call every month and chat to me for 10 minutes, I can just give you the next bit, and I can give you, and then you can come back and I can give you the next bit. If you want, I'm not talking about you now, Rena, I'm just going to, if you want a 2 hour session with me, I do sell 2 hour sessions, and I do take one-to-one clients on occasionally, and I will be taking on a couple of one-to-one clients in November. But within the sort of the way that the membership works, because on the mentoring calls, unless you get a hot seat, of course, we don't have as much time because there's a lot of people I want to help. It tends to be much more, let's just like get in. Turn that spanner, tweak that thing. Okay, now off you go, and then come back next month, and we'll see where you're at. So, but hopefully that was just okay for today. And I would say that I would say it feels like you've pretty much you've nailed the ideal client. You just now need to tighten up on that initial message. And it feels like it's not specifically Asian women. You will naturally attract them because you are an Asian woman. They will gravitate towards you. Anyway, so great. And I'm going to move on now to Meta, who is going to, among other things, teach me how to pronounce her name properly. So would you like to come on, Meta, and tell me your name and introduce yourself, and then we can go from there.
Hi, Catherine. My name is Maite. So it was
My,
very, yes.
I wasn't far off, was I?
Oh, that was very close. Thank
Yeah.
you. And I
Can
acknowledge
you tell us what your business is about?
that. So I certified as a coach a few months ago, and my niche is coaching development professionals within the UN and international institutions.
That's right, I remember now, yeah. And you have got a long career history working in that area, and now you're adding coaching in. So the field is you're already quite a deep expert in working in that field, but the coaching is the new piece. Yeah.
Exactly, yes.
And have you actually had any coaching clients yet?
So I coach seven people during my practice, and then I am coaching four people at the moment. Two of them are paying the full fee, which is amazing. Yeah.
Okay, great.
I
So
love
you've crossed stage one milestone then. You've had your first two proper paying clients, and now you're into the stage two. So you say how many pieces to have ready before launching a newsletter or starting a blog? What do you mean by pieces? Do you mean what else do you need to have in place? Yes,
No.
that's very okay. No.
What you were talking about this morning is, I could write things and messages I could like to send them, but I think of it today. I think that if I start to send emails, an email newsletter or something, I need to think of how many of them I need to have in a year in order for that to make sense. Not that I send one this month and then for 2 months I send nothing.
Why not?
Okay. I
Why
thought
not?
it may not look good if it's like that.
Do you think your clients know? Do you think they're going to notice? Oh, she sent us a newsletter and then we haven't heard from her for 2 hours. How unprofessional. Does she even know what she's doing? I don't think your clients are going to notice. So you're right. There is something here about consistency, but it comes at a later stage of business than where you're at. So let me ask you a different question. If you were to start a newsletter next week, how many people would you be sending it to?
150.
And are they officially on your email list? Like they've signed up to volunteered to be marketed to?
I don't have an email list. It's just my personal Gmail contact list with people I work with or friends in the sector.
Okay, so, and where are you based?
In Spain, but my work is international.
I shouldn't ask this question. I ought to know the answer to this question, but does GDPR apply in Spain?
The what?
GDPR, General Data Protection. What's that
Oh.
stand for? The ICO Commission. Somebody's nodding. Sabine is nodding. So it does apply there. Yeah. Let's say you start a newsletter, and even if it's once a month, you email everybody on that list from your Gmail without having got their express permission to put them on a newsletter list. After a while, you're going to start running foul of that rule. and you could risk getting your personal Gmail account blacklisted. So it's two things that happen. You've got there's two sides of this. One is the GDPR, which is General Data Protection Regulations, something like that, which is a law that came into place probably 5 or 6 years ago now to protect people from basically being spammed by email lists. And as business owners, we're not allowed to broadcast email in bulk to people who have not actually put their hand up and said they want it. And you can get reported and you can get fined. Now, the reality of it, us here today, every one of us right here now today, we're teeny tiny little businesses, right? The ICO, what's that stand for? ICO. Somebody might know what the ICO stands for. The ICO are highly unlikely to come after small businesses like us and fine us. So I tend to worry less about the GDPR, but I would still be a little cautious. The bigger issue really is email deliverability, because email deliverability in a small business is everything. So I talked on Monday evening with Tabitha, and she has her all of her followers are on Twitter. Not all of them, but they're all on social media and they're not on her own mailing list. The only way for you to own that asset is to have them on your own mailing list. And so that becomes like your biggest business asset. But behind the scenes, all of the different email service providers and email hosts are monitoring all of this email activity. And if you send a lot of emails that are not wanted, you end up getting basically you get blacklisted. So that's why people operate from things like MailerLite and ActiveCampaign and ConvertKit and all these different email softwares. And the risk of doing it from your personal Gmail is you don't really want that to get blacklisted, because you don't want those emails to start not getting through to really important clients when you're trying to start set get meetings set up. So although it's boring and it's going to hold you up, I would recommend that you aim to get those people to actually volunteer to hear from you and put them into a proper piece of email management software that allows you to email them. Now, I say that, but there's a bit of a grey area. You can probably get away with doing it a little bit to start with. Maybe you could email them a couple of times. But then I'd be emailing them and saying, if you want to receive this sort of information more regularly, please either sign up here to say that you want to receive them, or it even could be reply and let me know that you'd like to receive them, and I'll put and then you can put them in that database yourself. So that's probably the first thing. And then in terms of how often you send a blog or a newsletter, honestly, when you're just starting out, it really doesn't matter. You just want to keep yourself front of mind. And if that means that it's a little bit intermittent to start with, that's what I did at the beginning. I'd send one and then I'd get scared again and I wouldn't send one for a while. And then I'd send one again after a couple of months. It was always this like awkward thing. It sounds like you're not building what I'd call like an online marketing type of a business anyway. So in a business like mine, fully online, stage five business, email marketing is everything. It's the absolute core of my business. It's everything relies on email marketing. As you probably noticed, I send you quite a lot of emails, and now here you all are. So, where was I going with that? So for me, it's a really big part of email deliverability that I'm emailing consistently, but it's not for the people. Like all of you probably wouldn't notice if I didn't email you all for a month. Honestly, you probably wouldn't. And then you might get an email. If I didn't email you for 2 months or even 3 months, you wouldn't even notice probably. And then an email would pop in and you'd go, oh, Catherine, I haven't heard from her for a while. I email weekly because that's what the email deliverability monsters require. That if I email people consistently and I email them weekly, it's the optimal. Actually, the optimal would be daily, but I don't want to email people daily because I wouldn't want to be emailed daily myself. So I go with weekly. But I do that for my email deliverability and to keep the algorithm happy, to keep the bots happy. You'd be fine with monthly or 2 monthly or even once a quarter. The important thing would be that you're regularly reminding your contacts that you're out there and that you've got useful expertise and you've got useful knowledge and information. Now, just to jump off again to another side thing, if it was a blog, because you said newsletter, but if it was a blog and you were putting that blog on WordPress, the advantage of doing that more often would be that it would help with search engine optimization and it would help more people find you if they were Googling you. But then you have to consider, are your ideal clients Googling you, or are your ideal clients actually just going to hire you because they know you? It's, you know, you, that's also something to think about as well, because in some businesses, being Googleable makes a really big difference. In other businesses, it doesn't really make that much of a difference because people don't tend to Google for that thing. They'll just go to their network or they'll ask for a recommendation or something. So we've gone off in lots of different directions there, but is that helpful for today?
Yeah, you took away all my pressures. I can just start and not worry about regularity. That's great. Thank
Yeah,
you.
just start. And you know, you'll do it regularly anyway, because you'll send one and then after about a month you'll start going, oh, I really should send one. I really should send one. And then I used to get like that, and I would then I used to get up at 5 a.m. and do it, because I could somehow, my brain is really good very early in the morning, and I'd be like, oh my gosh, I haven't sent something for so long. I'm just gonna get up at 5 a.m. tomorrow and I'm gonna write when I'm gonna get it out. And yeah, I did it like that for a long time. So yeah, you'll have this internal feeling that pushes you to do it. And yes, in this early stage, you can be off the hook about, and now that's the answer I've given to Meta. If I speak to another one of you, I might give you a completely different answer, because you've got a completely different business. It's not just stage of business, it's also type of business. Different things are more or less effective for a different business. So somebody else might ask the same question and get a different answer. You'll notice that this happens with me. Okay, so next, where are we going next? These are good questions. These are a nice, like, broad range of questions to keep us busy this evening. Okay, so Jennifer's up next. Hi, Jennifer. Do you want to unmute yourself? Come on and say hello.
Hi, Catherine. Hi, everyone. So I'm a recently qualified coach. I have a background as a designer for in tech, essentially. And my question today is about sort of tying coaching with my previous career. So the kind of obvious link would be to coach creatives, but I'm kind of not interested in doing that. I've worked a lot with founders of tech startups, and so I'm kind of interested in the space between, somebody who has come from a corporate career and is looking to start their own business or go into freelancing or make their side hustle their main hustle. I don't want to coach on business because I don't feel like I'm an expert in that, but I am interested in the sort of mindset shift that happens in that space in between. And I think it's also a good link with my work as a designer because, I design websites, I design apps and web platforms and branding and that sort of thing. So I think there is like a nice link there, because I do still imagine myself doing that kind of work, but just for that audience. I'm not interested in doing, work for big tech companies and stuff like that. So I'm struggling with my messaging a bit and how to sort of bring those two together in a way that doesn't sound too businessy. And yeah, that there's a link between those two.
Have you, so everything you've said makes absolute sense. Have you created a sort of a draft message that you could try out with us?
Yeah, so I've got like the I help statement. So I help accomplished professionals and emerging entrepreneurs transition into their own purpose-driven business. I help them gain clarity on their vision, guide them in creating a structured and intentional path forward. And help them reconnect with their authentic selves so that they can build a purposeful business. Like a lot of what branding is about coming back to your authentic self and then just visualizing that through your brand. So that's what I have so far. And then I did write a bit around like my sort of professional bio, and a lot of that draws upon like my experience as a designer and working in tech startups and stuff like that.
Let's stay with the high level message to begin with, because typically somebody who comes across you for the first time typically your bio isn't the first thing they read. And so the idea of the initial message and captivating introduction, which is what you just read out, is how do you have somebody who's maybe never come across you before? They meet you for the first time somewhere. They meet you at a networking or a social event, or they come across you because you're giving a talk, or they come across you online, or they see something that you've posted on LinkedIn. What's the message that, or the way you communicate what you do that has them recognize themselves, that has them go, oh my gosh, that sounds like me? And it makes them want to find out more. And that's when they would end up maybe, don't know why I've gone to LinkedIn, but clicking on About Me and reading more about you, or clicking through to a website, or coming and speaking to you and wanting to find out more. So I would sort of, just for the purposes of now, I think staying with the message rather than looking at the bio as well would be the best, like, use of, because the bio is going to come together anyway. So I feel like what I feel like you're saying is, or what I'm hearing, right? What I'm hearing is you're clear. You're clear on who you want to help. That's what I'm hearing. You want to help people who have been successful in their professional or corporate career and who want to transition to more of a purpose-driven business. Have you got an idea what type of business when you're thinking purpose-driven business? Because I think that would help you. You might not include it in words in the message, but I think it would help it feel tighter if you knew what sort of business is they're starting. Like, is it a tech startup? Is it a hypnotherapy business? These are completely different sorts of businesses.
So the people that I have coached, they are moving in, not necessarily, it's not necessarily a purpose-driven business, but they're moving into a business where they're like really passionate about it. And I had a canine behaviorist or a dog trainer. I had another girl who wanted to become a freelancer in communications and marketing. So they're not necessarily purpose-driven businesses, but I guess I put that in there because I don't necessarily want to coach people who are just doing it for money. That there is a deeper calling, and I don't know, as I'm talking, the word purpose like just keeps coming back to me because that was also my journey as well, like becoming a freelancer. I wanted to choose who I worked with. And the type of work that I do. So, yeah, it's kind of more around
These are
that.
people who are like my clients, really. Small businesses. They're wanting to do their own thing. They want it to have more of a sense of purpose, meaning, something they're passionate about, not just part of the daily grind, just in order to bring the money home. Okay. So I feel you've got the ideal client, and the next stage is actually just to work on tightening up that message. And things I would look at there, I'm not going to spend time. It takes time to really unpack and put together again a message. There's not going to be time to do that here and now. But so if you were in the membership, I'd be encouraging you to come up with a draft captivating introduction, tightened up a bit, follow the training on how to do that, tighten this up, and then go and do some research calls. Because I'm really interested to know whether your ideal client really wants to. Can you give me that phrase about the authentic self again?
Help them reconnect with their authentic selves.
Yeah. So that might be something that is really important for them in order for them to achieve what they're setting out to do. I'd be very curious to know whether it's what they want. I'd be very curious to know whether there's somebody thinking about leaving their corporate career right now and not quite having the courage to make it happen, lying in bed thinking, if I could only connect with my authentic self, everything would be all right. Do you see what I mean? It doesn't tend to be the stuff that's driving people. You know it's valuable. You will bring it in and it will be part of your longer message. But I don't know that leading with it is going to quite have the punch. And what came before it was more powerful. What was it you said before it?
I help them gain clarity on their vision, guide them in creating a structured and intentional path forward.
Okay. Yeah. Towards towards creating this purpose-built, this purpose-built, towards creating this purpose-driven business. That's the end result they want. So you need to end your captivating introduction with a quite clear, quite tangible end result they want. And that's the tangible end result they want. Yes, they want the pathway and the journey, but they also want to achieve the thing. They want to end up leaving their job and starting this business. And the connect with your authentic self just feels a bit like fluff there somehow. Just loses some power. And it's something you bring into your longer messaging. You know, you can talk about something about how when you've been stuck in the corporate grind for many years, you can often lose connection with your authentic self because you've had to put on a mask or play a role at work. And part of being successful in starting up your new venture is actually to learn how to come from your true authentic self and what you really want and how you want to be in the world. There's a whole message there around it. I just don't think it's the thing that's going to hook them. Like if you were fishing, I don't think it's the worm on the end of the hook that they're going to come and bite. And you need the worm on the end of the hook for that initial statement.
I think the thing that I'm taking away from this conversation is that to focus more on what is the outcome, what are they getting from doing the coaching with me, and make it tangible. Because as you said that back to me, I'm like, yeah, that does sound a bit fluffy, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I love that you get that because very often I speak to people who are very attached to their fluffy bit. You know, a lot of people, they have the fluffy bit, we'll call it the fluffy bit, and it's often the thing that actually you know is the most important. So I might give an example of a very example that often comes to mind is when you dating coaches and relationship coaches, they often put an awful lot of emphasis in their message on, I'm going to help you develop a better relationship with yourself. And the poor woman's going, I don't want a better relationship with my health. Just help me find the man. I want to settle down and have children, sharpish, you know. But very often, coaches and healers and therapists are very, very attached to the thing you know they need. But the thing you know they need isn't the thing they know they want. So you hook them with what they want, and then you introduce the thing that you know they need as part of your work. And I love that you get it. And the fact that you get it means that you're going to be a great marketer. Like you're naturally going to be a great marketer because you just get it. And a lot of people just don't sort of get that so quickly. So that's brilliant. And I think you've got it. You've got your ideal client and you've got your message, but your message is just a bit, it just needs pruning and tightening up and tightening up. You know, it's not there yet, but you've got the core of it. So yeah, great. That was helpful.
Great. Perfect. Thank you so much, Catherine.
Thank you very much. Right, let's see where we're at because I did say, wouldn't it be nice to just hop on and do about an hour? I'm going to just check in how many questions there are left and see. So we've got Jill and we've got Mate again. I may or may not come back to people twice today. Let's just see. Suzanne wrote GDPR for Dummies. That's right. Do you know, actually, Mate, you're asking, is it possible to join the Sticky Message Clinic without joining the membership? It isn't because it's a bonus for people who join the membership, but to be honest, it wouldn't make sense if you didn't anyway, because you need the training from within the membership in order to then workshop that at the. So the idea is that the workshop isn't where I teach you how to craft your message. The training on how to do that is already in the members area, and you would go in and do that training on your own and then come and then we would refine it together. But thank you for your question anyway. It's an interesting question. Rebecca. Rena described Jennifer to a T. Okay, really good feedback there for Rena. Okay, I'm just scrolling. Where are we? Okay, Katerina asking a question as well. Okay, great. So yeah, Jane, who's called Fernanda here, has answered Katerina's question, but I'll answer that really quickly as well. So yes, what does email deliverability mean? This is what Jane says. It's about making sure that when you send an email, it actually lands in the inbox of the person that you sent it to. And when you've got a big mailing list and you're emailing 4,000 people in one go, 10,000 people in one go, 30,000, 100,000, 500,000 people in one go. Huge, huge percentages of that number, like 20% of those emails, cannot get to the inbox of the person you sent them to if your email deliverability is affected. 100% will not get through anyway. But if you're getting 90% through, then you're doing well, roughly. I'm not really an expert in deliverability, but it's something we do focus on in my business. So yeah, as your business grows, for a lot of you here, it's not an issue right now, not even something you need to be thinking about. But when you're in a stage four, stage five business, email deliverability becomes quite important because you want as many people as possible to be receiving emails about your offers and things that you're inviting them to. So we are coming to Jill next, aren't we? So, Jill, would you like to unmute yourself and just tell everyone what you a little bit about what you do?
I train, coach, and mentor people who are first-time managers in the charity sector.
Okay. And your question is about approaching organizations. And is this because I think on your hot seat form, I got the feeling, now I haven't looked at it today, that there was some uncertainty about whether you were targeting individuals or whether you're targeting the organizations themselves. Is this question because actually you are leaning towards targeting the organizations?
Yes.
And that's what you feel is the thing you want.
Yes.
You just got some hesitation about it.
Yeah, because I've been trying to work with the individuals, but the individuals are saying we have to get funding from the organization, and then that's where it gets stuck because they can't get the funding. So I'm thinking I'd be better approaching the organizations, and if I've got, say, half a dozen organizations or however many that I can do regular work with once or twice a year when they have got a cohort of new managers, then I've got ongoing. Whereas the individuals, I've got to keep finding new clients all the time. And it would be cheaper for the organization to do it in bulk rather than, so, each individual costs this much, but if I'm doing it with the organization, I can charge less because I've got a cohort.
Yeah, and some of those first-time managers that come to you because their organization has brought you in or sent them to you may decide to invest out of their own pocket in their own ongoing professional development. Now, we are going to come to your question about approaching organizations, but I also want to say that without any more information than you've given me, I also have a feeling that perhaps your sales conversations could be stronger, could be better with those first-time managers that are saying, "Oh, I can't afford it. I've got to go and ask my organization to pay." Do you feel there might be something in that, that if you were conducting that conversation differently, you might be getting a different response or
I'm
not?
not sure. I mean, I've gone through the training that you've got, your free training you've got online for the conversation, I think, or I've seen it. And yeah, I have tried to put some of those principles in place. It's more like a high it's a call that the calls I have, I get off the back of a free webinar that I do, and then I say, if you want to book in a call with me to talk through any issues that you've got and to talk about my program. So they know in advance that I'm going to speak to them about that. It's not like they come on and then suddenly it's a sales call. So I talk to them, I ask them what prompted them. Some of them just want the information and that's fine. And I say there's no obligation, but I still tell them about my program. Others come on and say, I'm really interested in your program. So then I talk to them about the program, and then I say to them, what they want to do going forward, and they'll say, I need to go back and get funding from my organization. And then that's where it gets stuck. And I follow up, and I try and give them some information about
I try and give them some advice about pitching to their organization. So it isn't just about them, but it's also about what the benefits are to their organization so that they can pitch it in a good way. But they are, they don't come back
Do you want to stay on this thread, or do you want to go with the question that you typed in? Because we'll just have time to do one of these.
I will go with, let's go with the question I've asked, because I think that's what I need to do is I need
Okay.
to be pitching organizations. Yeah.
Okay. So it's interesting you say that you don't want a cold call. What does this look like in your head? What are you envisioning? What are you picturing?
I'm picturing emailing or messaging on LinkedIn to organize to either HR people or directors, fundraising directors, people who I know would hold the budget, and telling them about what I do and asking them whether they would be interested. And I don't feel confident doing that at all. I feel like they, you know, that if they're looking for training for their new managers, they would just go online and find a training company to do it. But what I feel I offer is something different, because I offer the coaching as well as the training, which they wouldn't normally get.
Okay, so are you saying that you don't think they should be going online and finding a training company?
No, I mean, I'm not saying they shouldn't be doing that. What I'm saying is they won't find what I'm offering online, because they will just find a training course.
Okay, yeah. So really you are saying for them to get what I offer, they shouldn't go online and find it, because they're not going to find it.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
So how are they going to know you exist? I mean, we could talk about your SEO, your search engine optimization, so that you are the one they find when they go online, but that's a much longer game and it's more competitive. So let's go with, how can you get, so that wasn't the question I just asked, was it? It was, yeah, how can you help them know you exist so they don't even have to go online looking, because they already know about you?
Well, I'm connecting with a lot of them on LinkedIn. So I'm connecting both with people who are maybe ready to move into management, new managers and senior managers. I'm connecting with them all, basically. So I'm putting content out there. I have produced a lead magnet for senior managers, but I haven't put it out there properly yet. I did once get somebody that I connected with. It only happened once. She was a senior manager, and I had a call book in my diary from somebody, and his director had said to him, contact, I've connected with this woman, contact her because we've got some new managers that need help. So she had seen me and had put him onto me. Nothing came of it in the end, but you know, it was good because it was an inbound lead, which was the first one I'd ever had.
Okay. So,
So I suppose I'm
how can I
thinking
help you?
They could find me. I want to approach them, but I don't want to sound like I'm coming across as a cold call. I want to find a different way of approaching them that would be more heart-centered, as you know.
Yeah. Could you make it a warm call? I mean, it's interesting you're using the word call, because you haven't once talked about calling anybody.
No, I mean, yeah, it's the figurative. I don't mean telephone call. I mean approach, a cold
okay.
approach.
What if I agreed with you that, you know, cold approach doesn't sound very nice, does it? What if you were to make a warm and friendly approach?
Yeah, that I think that's probably what I'm asking. How do I make a warm and friendly approach without it sounding like I'm, I don't know, cold?
Okay, so you, ideal client can really help here. So you talked earlier about the types of people that you would want to reach out to, and that you've already started building up a bit of a network on LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you mentioned HR, which is HR is the obvious route, but HR can also be tricky because part of HR's job is to be a gatekeeper, and they very often already have their preferred suppliers. And so, although they're the obvious route, I used to work in recruitment, and I used to cold call for a living, like proper cold calling. And we would avoid HR like the plague for that reason. So I'm not suggesting you completely avoid them, but what if you were to go to an actual decision maker within the organization? Who would you be going to? What would their job description be, perhaps?
They would be probably a director of fundraising or head of something. Head of
Okay.
marketing or
Yeah, and are you yeah, and are you is this mainly first time managers in the non-profit or charity sector? Okay, great. I don't think I'd quite pick that up. Brilliant. So that's another string to your bow. You've got this specialism in that area as well. Is that clear in all of your marketing materials?
yeah.
Perfect. So, this director of fundraising, man or woman? Really?
Usually a man, actually.
Okay. Can we give him a name? What's his name? Just the first name is fine.
Mike.
Mike. Now, what's my in relation to what you do? Mike's sitting at his desk one Friday afternoon. In relation to what you offer, what's on his mind? What are his worries and concerns?
I think that's where I get stuck because I don't know. But it isn't something that is, it isn't something that's a pain point for those people. It's the pain point for the people who are coming into that low position. For the senior people, it's more about recruit, not losing staff. So nurturing your staff, ensuring that they stay within the organization, saving recruitment costs. And gain keeping that knowledge and experience within the organization.
And did you say that? And do you think that Mike, when he's bringing on a new manager underneath him, that he wants that to be as smooth and seamless for him as possible, so that it's as so he has as least headaches as possible as a result of bringing on this new person?
Yes.
Okay. Do you
Yeah.
think that might worry him? Because I certainly know that I resist taking new people on because I sometimes think, oh, I just haven't got the time to babysit them. This is even experienced people sometimes. And so, where I'm going with this is that when you really understand your ideal client and the sorts of concerns that they have, you can start to put them in your shoes. And instead of visualizing, there's Mike, he's busy in his job. The last thing he wants is to hear from somebody like me. If the last thing he ever wants is to hear from somebody like you, then you would need to start questioning whether you're actually offering something that companies want. Now, I don't think that's the case at all. What you need to be thinking is that somewhere on his mind, amongst all the other things that are on his mind, is things that are bothering him, worrying him, concerning him, burdening him to do with bringing on new managers. And this is where your contacts become warm and friendly because you're not disturbing him in the middle of his busy day to talk to him about something he doesn't want to hear about. You're coming to him saying, "Hey, Mike, I know you might be worried about this." You might not say that, but I know that when you're bringing on new managers, it can be blah, 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 blah. I just wanted to introduce yourself. I'm Jill. Here's what I do. Is this something you might be interested in finding out more about at some point? See, just and it's very much more, it's going to be a friendly approach if you're coming at it from a friendly energy. And it's managing to stay in that zone of, even if you were only in the zone for an hour a day, of sitting down and like connecting in with the fact that out there are all these senior managers who are bringing on their new first time managers, or they're bringing them up. Often they might be coming up within the organization. Of course, they're getting promoted up into their first time manager job. They're completely clueless, maybe lacking in confidence, imposter syndrome. And you can reach out to all the mics and say, "Hey, I can help you with this. I can take this load off your mind. Bring me in once a quarter, and I will help develop and coach and get these first-time managers to a place where they're really standing on their own 2 feet and doing you proud. And you look great to your bosses now because you're running this great team. You know, I'm making up a little bit, but you know, you'll, as time goes on, you'll learn more and more what they need to hear. And I think the biggest switch there is to switch to, you have something they need and will benefit from, and they're not going to find somebody like you by Googling. So you're doing them a favor. There is, amongst all the things this manager is juggling, this is one of the things that is on their plate that could become a headache for them. And you're reaching out with a very friendly approach and professional approach to say, here I am, this is what I do, would you be interested? Now, I used to cold call for a living. This is what cold calling for a living used to look like. Picking up the phone, introducing myself, getting halfway through the sentence, having the phone put down on me. Picking up the phone, halfway through the sentence, phone put down on me. Picking up the phone, finish my sentence, get sworn at, phone put down on me. Over and over again, maybe by call number seven. And I used to keep a little post-it note because somebody had said to me, just keep going, you'll eventually, somebody will speak to you. And I used to keep a little post-it note, and I used to write a line on the post-it note every time somebody didn't want to speak to me. I couldn't get to 10 lines without somebody engaging in conversation. They'd pick up the phone, I'd introduce myself, I'd say what I do, they'd be interested, they'd want a meeting or a conversation, or they'd say, actually, we are hiring, here's what we're looking for, can you help? I would never get to 10 rejections ever. And the reason I'm saying it is because this is business, right? You've got to reach out to, you're going to have to reach out to maybe, I don't even know the numbers, because you're going to find out, but you might have to reach out 20 times and get ignored for four people to engage in conversation with you for two of them to become clients, for example. So you have to be okay with the putting, we had a brilliant conversation about this in the membership last week, actually. Thora, who specializes in mergers and acquisitions and supporting companies through that, very similar conversation about being, when you've identified the key people who you would like to provide this service to, that you have an organized system of contacting them again regularly. Because if you don't hear from them and they don't reply, find another reason to. So maybe you send the first message and it's an introduction to you and they don't reply. But you said you've created a lead magnet. So maybe a month later, you say, oh, I thought you might be interested in this guide that I've put together. It might ignore you. Leave it another month, find another reason to reach out. After three goes, I might leave it and I might put them onto every 3 months. But I would always assume that unless somebody directly tells you, Jill, stop bothering me, unless directly tell you, just keep going because you never know. And you're putting yourself in people's awarenesses. It's a little bit like if you were in a business where you were marketing to individuals, you'd be posting on social media, maybe, and you'd be putting out all this content on social media with no idea whether anybody was responding. And you might put stuff up on social media 3 times a day for 2 weeks and not even get a bite. But that's part of, you know, this is part of, but all those people are seeing you. So all the people who ignore you might still be seeing your messages, they're still registering something, they might be filing you away. And you know, the more times you get in front of them, the more likely they are to take notice. So it is like a bit of a campaign, more than a, I'm going to send a message and I'll get a client instantly. It's more of an ongoing campaign of putting yourself back in front of people over and over again. But does the idea of being a warm and friendly caller help that?
Yeah, that's been really helpful, and really, really helpful. I've got to get off the call because I've got some other work to do, and I've got a deadline of 9 o'clock to finish
We
it
all, Jill,
by.
we all have to get off the call. I was hoping that we'd be done by 8 o'clock. So, you know, we all want to get off the call.
You need to go and watch yours
Want to
Netflix.
just give you a really tiny, tiny thing before you're here. And if you need to go, then I'd say you don't need to respond to me. I just want to give pass the feedback on. I saw your lead magnet, and the title of it didn't sound very confident. It sounded a little bit like you were, I don't see it, a little preaching. And it was the word should. So I don't remember the name of the title now, but
Yeah, I know which, but yeah, it's the
if
C,
you
it's
took the
part
word
C.
should out of that title, it would sound more confident and more clear, like as in with something like why you should something something your first time managers,
Yeah.
but just tweak it so it doesn't have the word should in it or sound more definite.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Okay, thanks. Bye. Off you go.
Bye.
Right, now
Bye.
where are we going next? I'm going to come to Rebecca next. And I think Rebecca then was the last one, unless we start going back around to people for a second time. I'm not sure. Let's see how we get on. Rebecca, would you like to come on, unmute yourself, introduce yourself? I know you've just joined
Hello.
the membership, so nice
I've
way
got
from.
the guilt now that I'm going to take your time up and you don't
Yes,
want
it's
to
fine. No,
be
it's absolutely perfect. To be honest,
I'm already in my pajamas. I've already
yeah,
checked
no, I thought
out.
I'll put this extra call on. Wouldn't it be nice if it ends up being an hour? But in the back of my mind, I thought an hour and a half will be, an hour and a half is just
And
right.
I'm
So it's
starting at 2020 and I'm all for double numbers, so I'm very
perfect.
happy about that.
Yeah.
Must be aligned.
And do you want to start by introducing yourself and just let everybody know what you do so we've got context for that?
Yeah, so I'm an EFT practitioner for the last sort of 2 years, properly officially. Prior to that, teacher. So,
Sorry,
and I,
how many years did you say you've been doing it?
God, I said two. I think it might be
Okay.
three. I don't actually
Yeah, that's
know.
fine.
So, I mean, it's come up in other calls when people have asked, I went part time. And then my idea was to do it gently and slowly and build it up. And then I basically just hit the wall with the teaching and the system and went off and just walked away from my job, basically, pretty much. So it was all quite drastic. So now I'm building up from a place of paying the mortgage from the savings and,
Right,
so
so you're an EFT practitioner.
yeah.
You're currently, I did have a quick checked you out online earlier on,
All
actually.
right.
And you're very much a generalist at the moment by the looks of
Yes,
it.
definitely.
You position yourself as an EFT practitioner
Yeah.
and you are starting to work on honing down into an ideal client so that you can stand out a
Yes.
bit more with your
My
message.
logical brain always said it will be teachers. And so I've for a long time sort of it's never felt aligned, but it felt sensible because that's what brought me to this.
Okay.
And I can see the
Now,
pain and I know it would help.
I just frame us up.
Yeah.
Basically, your question is that you would like help honing down on your ideal
Yeah.
client and seeing if I can help draw that out of you a little bit. The logical, your head is saying teachers.
And I'm getting much better at ignoring my head and going, it doesn't feel right.
And what does your heart say and what does feel aligned?
I think there's a link between it's not necessarily teachers, it's the trappedness and the not being able to see a way out or a different way or believing that anything else is possible. So it's basically put up or shut up kind of situations. But I get that that's very general. And I've tried to look at the clients that I've got and who lights me up and go, is there anything in them and I can't. And so, and also I've kind of accidentally ended up still having a foot in school in that I'm doing EFT with children in a school, which is great and it's needed. And I don't want to. And I know I don't want to, but that's what's bringing the money in at the moment. So it's like, oh, I'm constantly in this battle of I definitely need the bills paying. So
Yeah,
hurry up and make this
and
decision.
Rebecca, honestly, I just want to say to that, whatever you do, do not beat yourself up that you have to pay bills. We
Yeah.
all have to pay bills. This is the reality. Now, sometimes some people, when they start their business, they don't have to worry about the bills. And this is often if they've been very successful in their career and they've created financial independence, so they're effectively starting a business after they've retired, or they have a partner or a spouse who's bringing in a household income that means they don't need to work. For many of us, myself included, we have to pay the bills. I don't have children, but it's just me. I have never had anyone else to pay for things for me, and it's a reality. And I think this idea that somehow I'm doing something wrong because I have to pay my bills. I really want
I
you to.
think I am grateful because I'm curious about everything. So I go, oh, this doesn't feel right. Oh, why is that? Is it because you're like still got some trauma left with school, or is it because you just genuinely don't like it, or what? So it's been useful. and I can see it's useful, and I'm okay with going, oh, okay, so if it slips off, I'll be all right with it because it's not where I want to direct.
And what if for the time being you could be really grateful to that job
And
for
I am, and I tap all the way to it. I'm so grateful that I'm earning money today in a way that's, there's no reason for me not to like it. It's pleasant. I love it. I love the kids. I know it's had brilliant outcomes. But again, I think there's guilt in there. It's like, so then if you turn your back on that as well and you've done it to teaching and you know that you go in that classroom and you care about those children. See, I get emotional about it because I'm like, then who is going to? Because they don't. There's a lot of people that don't and are in it for the wrong reasons. And a lot of people that are so miserable in it, the children aren't getting what they deserve. So that's kind of why the teacher thing still sort of hangs around, but it's not out of lighting me up and giving me joy. It's out of, I feel bad for that situation. So.
You could specialize in helping any type of a person with any type of a problem. If we could somehow have you wake tomorrow morning and rise into tomorrow with none of your past behind you, none of this history of being a teacher or how you feel about helping the kids, none of it's with you. You just rise out of your bed tomorrow and you're like fresh born Rebecca. What does Rebecca want to do?
Yeah, I still think it's wishy-washy because it's that. Honestly, I've been noting down all evening because everything was resonating, and it's the what I get to with a client is I just want to shake them and go, "You are normal. You think you're not normal," and you know it's that's the. I had a client this morning, and she genuinely thinks there's something wrong with her. And everything that she says, I can identify with, and she's putting it down to her ADHD label and her autism label, and it's that. So what drives me and the service and the passion is towards helping people actually see that they're not flawed, or if they are, it's all right. Do you know what I mean? To accept that, but that's still so big.
That sounds to me, okay, from where you are right now, might be too big for us to nail this down into an
Oh,
ideal
yeah,
thing.
I get that. I just thought it might
I feel
poke
like
me on a right direction.
there's a very useful distinction for you to think about, which is there's a difference between our personal mission and the message that we put out into the world. So it might be that that you're here to show people that they are normal and they're not flawed and there's nothing wrong with them and they're amazing, beautiful human beings, no matter what they might think of themselves. That might be part of your personal mission. This is the work that you're here to do. This is your work. It's not necessarily what it says in your message, because you're right, that would be a little broad. Oh, you think you're abnormal and you'd like to feel normal? Come to me.
Yeah, no one admits it. What did I write down earlier that was probably a bit better? They want to feel okay with themselves. There's something about hiding it and feeling like everybody else is okay in this situation, so I should be. So I don't get to speak out and I don't get to ask for support because there must be something, it's that something in it of they, but then oh, they might not even be looking because they don't quite get it yet. Because a lot of people live their life thinking this
Can I
is as
ask
good as it
you
gets.
so in the membership, which you have just joined, which I'm really pleased about because I can direct you off to resources that are going to
Yes.
be really helpful. It sounds like the first thing that I'm going to encourage you to do is to work on the crafting your message and take some time with that and really think it through. Because one of the thing about your ideal client is the most effective way to come up with your ideal client is to start by identifying one person, one individual person. And what I'm hearing from you is this: everything's valid, everything's relevant, everything you're saying is relevant, but it's still very broad and it could apply to just about anybody.
Yeah, I know. Sorry, I know that.
And so, what I'd love to ask you is imagine that tomorrow a new client contacts you. And she is the most, I'm saying she, is she right? Is it, is your
Yeah, I
ideal?
do think she, and I think, yeah.
She can't, an ideal, a client contacts you. We don't know where from. She's been referred from another client. She's heard of you. We don't know where she's come. She's come out of magic. And she contacts you, and she turns out to be the absolute perfect ideal client, the one that you're born to work with. And she signs up with you on your highest level program, and she commits to work with you for the next 6 months. Can you visualize her? Can you somehow visualize this ideal client?
No, a little voice in my head says I want her to be rich.
Okay, great, she's
But
rich.
I don't think I'm talking. I don't think I can't identify with rich people, or because I've never experienced, you know what I mean? The where my experience comes from and what I see in people and what I end up doing, there's a bit of me is like, oh, you're still ending up at the end of the scale that's never going to get you properly out of where you are. Me, obviously, not you. Do you know what I mean? So I feel torn in even going with what I enjoy and I love, because a little bit of me is going, I'm fed up with being at the
Art,
bottom end.
art, art.
Yeah.
What does your heart tell you?
I don't know. I'm not. All I've got is it is that they're trapped in a situation
Okay, great.
that they can't see a
She
way of.
is
She, yeah.
trapped in a situation. Great. What's her name? Make
I
her
don't
up.
know.
We're going to
Yeah, I
make
know.
head. No head. No
I
head.
know, but you try being a teacher, every single blinking name has got a child attached to it. I can't do it because I then see it was hard enough naming my son. I don't know. Stephanie came in my head, but now I can hear the
Stephanie. Okay.
grandma
Her
on
name is
the.
Stephanie, and she feels trapped.
Yeah, I don't know anyone called Stephanie properly.
Why is she? What is it? Why does she feel trapped? We're not doing broad, we're doing one
No, I
individual.
know. Yeah.
Her name is Stephanie. She's coming to talk to you tomorrow and she feels trapped. What is it she feels trapped by?
It's like it's trapped by herself because there's some kind of knowing that there's meant that there is more out there, but I don't know. They're,
Okay, great.
it's like it's like self-flagellation of purposely staying there because you on some level think that's all I'm worth or that's all I deserve or I'm
Okay.
not meant for anything more than this, so I just got to stay here.
Okay.
There's,
Okay.
it's like there's a bit of desperation in there of, I just, I can't do it anymore. So that's not working. Carrying on down this road is frightening, but I actually
What
have
does
got
she, and
no
what does she feel
concept
trapped?
of.
What does she feel trapped? I understand she's trapping herself, but what is she trapping herself in?
But yeah, I don't know if she understands she's trapping herself
What does
yet.
she think she's trapped by? Her job, her relationship, her health?
Well,
What's
that's
trapped?
it. I don't.
Her house?
Job is a big one, but there's also.
Okay, I've got a completely
Yeah.
different question for you, Rebecca. A
Okay, good. Because
completely
I'm.
different question. Do you want to niche, or are you trying to do this because you think you're supposed to?
There's a bit of, but I do because I think it would just make everything easier. And there's a big part of me that's like, I can so see the need for it. And I want that. I want that freedom and that ease and that, oh, now I know who I'm talking to. And I know it would all sort of slot into place. It feels like I'm just, but then I did write when you would, because the EFT part of me is like, so what is your resistance to this? And I think part of it maybe is the teacher in me that is so used to having a class of 30 and none of them are anything like each other. And I've got to deliver this same thing, but I tailor it to all of them, that perhaps it's just habit
Look at all of you.
of
Look at all of you.
just,
Yeah. I've got a class of
I don't want to. I've also got, yeah, no, that's another
But
thing I've got, fear of public speaking.
no, what I'm trying to
But
say that
yeah.
you might have a class of 30,
Oh yes, I know you're tailoring it.
And what
Yeah,
I'm
I totally
saying
get
is,
that, and that's what I even thought
I
about
might
earlier
have,
when you were saying
yeah,
it.
I have one message out there in my marketing.
Yeah.
All of you are different,
Yeah.
but each one of you has resonated in some way with what I offer and what I do.
And what I wanted, I think, was it's the structure and the simplicity and the pathway. So that answer is, well, yes, of course, then I do want to niche, because that is part of what brought me in, is that, oh, I just want the ease and the simplicity and the knowing what I'm doing.
I'm going to give you something that I want you to just ponder and percolate for the next few days. Because what I can see is the way, what I can see is a lot of thinking. Now, there's nothing
Yes.
wrong with thinking. I'm a very thinking person. I'm very head-based. In human design, I'm a mental projector. Everything is up here. It's all thinking, logic, reasoning. This is me. So it's not a criticism anyway. But there's so much thinking. Whatever you come up with, you come straight in with the
I then
reason.
doubt it. Yeah.
Straight away, you almost, as soon as you come up
Yeah.
with it, you analyze it. So I think that trying to get to your ideal client this way might just be a little bit painful and take you a long time. And I would be curious to see if you could percolate on this. What if, for the purposes of, what if, for the purely practical, very logical purpose of getting your business easier, you just had to choose something?
Yeah.
And you had to choose something a week from today, and it was set in stone and you had to run with it. What would you choose? Because that might be a different way of coming at it. And it'd be really interesting to see what you came up with if you just had to decide and leave all the feelings and the reasons and the what ifs out of it and see where that brings you.
Okay, I've written it down.
Yeah. If you had to decide, you were going
You'll be
to pay
like,
to
you'll be
decide,
shaking me.
and you were doing it
Come
for
on,
pure,
woman.
yeah. And you're doing it for a purely practical, logical reason. I am making this decision on a very practical level because it's going to make my business easier. What am I going to choose? And see how specific you can get it. And remember that this is an experiment. You're not going to be
And I,
forced to.
that's I, that is my approach to life. Everything's an experiment nowadays. It properly is.
Yeah. But
So I'm quite good at.
you're not going to be forced to choose, but you can
No,
just
I know.
stay with this.
See what that feels like.
What if I just decided and then see what you come up with? And with that, I am going to bring the call to an end and just leave you to percolate on that if that's There was one last question from Meta, but she's still there. I'm not going to come to you again, Meta, just because of time. And we've got another call tomorrow, and we've got another call on Friday. But I'm just might just see what you said and see if I can just add anything to that. Yeah, how do you test your captivating introduction beyond the general feedback? So what I teach is go out into the world and use it. So, I don't know how practical that is for you. I don't know. Where you're okay, and what you do as well is very okay. So normally, I would say to somebody, put your shoes on, leave the house, go and find somewhere local where you can meet new people that you've never met before, get into conversation, and tell them what you do. And that might be networking, it might be a social event, because you specialize in a very particular sector. It almost doesn't mean as much whether a member of the general public recognizes what you do, because you want your ideal clients to recognize what you do. So in your case, it might actually just be a case of getting it as good as you can and then trying to set up some research calls with people in that sector and running it by them and seeing how it lands and seeing, saying, if you didn't know me, if you'd never met me and you didn't know me and you came across this, am I somebody that you'd be interested, that you'd feel like you wanted to connect with? If so, what is it about it that lands? If not, what is it about it that doesn't work? So I'd say that's probably your next step. Okay, thank you everyone for being here. And yeah, we are going to wrap up now. Apart from that, I've answered all the questions, but also because I know that if we go too long, then I'm not going to be very good at what I need to do tomorrow. And I wasn't really estimating being much more than 90 minutes if I did a sneaky extra call. But thank you all of you who have brought your questions. And Ella, what was the surprise? Ella's got me curious because is Ella still here? think, oh no, she's had to go. Ella, it's one of our very long-term members. She's been in the membership for 7 years, and she wrote, "Whoa, this surprises me." And I'm like, "Oh, what was that? What did I say that surprised her?" So, right, let's hop off, everyone. Have a really beautiful evening. There's another call tomorrow evening, and then on Friday, from like 4 till 5, I'm going to be doing a session on the power of focus. And then from about 5 onwards, I'll be opening up to answer any questions. Don't forget, the membership is open for enrollment at businessfromtheheart.com. I'll talk about that more and more as the week goes on. And on Friday lunchtime, I'm going to do a sort of a bit of a presentation introduction to it to tell you all a lot more detail about it and know what's included, what to expect, and so on. And good luck, all of you, and good luck, Rebecca, percolating. Okay, bye, everyone. Lots of love. Bye bye.